Wanted to share with you all about mind states, about wholesome and unwholesome, and how we can cultivate those and what it means, because they're real fundamental in our practice. And I was sort of struggling about which one to do first. And they're completely interrelated, but thought I'd work with the unwholesome ones and how we work with those. Because it's a lot of what we run into. That's kind of our gritty reality a lot, right? Kind of several people have said that in different ways. And then we can talk the next time about cultivating the wholesome side. And these are, you know, the qualities of mind, sometimes called mental factors. It's these qualities that sort of underlie how we are a lot. And they condition how we view reality, how we view ourselves, how we navigate the world. And so how we can work with these states of mind, it's a real important portal, doorway into our practice. And it has a whole lot to do with how our sitting practice goes and our loving kindness practice goes, is just what we do with our wholesomeness or unwholesomeness of mind and how we work with that. And it's kind of a bridge. You know, it's funny, the Dharma is so holographic that you can come into it from 85 different facets, and it's like, oh yeah, that's the most important one. That's the doorway. So I know I say that every other time probably, but they all are. But it is kind of a bridge between the mindfulness aspect of our practice and what sometimes in Mahayana, they use this funny term method, which refers to loving kindness and compassion and all those other aspects. And it's a funny translation, and I do not know what the Tibetan word is, but it's a way to pull them all together. That whole loving kindness, compassion, kind of opening the heart aspect, and then the mindfulness wisdom aspect, and these mental factors or these states of mind they interconnect with both. And it's kind of an interconnection between them. And through mindfulness and clear comprehension, we see what's arising in this heart mind, in these states of mind. We become aware of them. And then through kindness and compassion, we take some action to reduce the unwholesome and to cultivate the wholesome. In a way, that's what's happening with our loving kindness, how it influences, you know, how we think and what we do to others. So it's inherently cultivating the wholesome. And this is kind of it's a useful approach, because it takes especially here in Judeo-Christian culture, wholesome and unwholesome can have kind of a sting to them. You know, it can feel a little bit like sin, the sin thing. And so we're not talking about that, but really what's helpful to live a balanced, beautiful, helpful, and liberated life. That's what wholesome and unwholesome is about. It's like this basis for how we conduct our journey on the path. Don't know how to pronounce this gentleman's name, Andrew Elendinsky, someone from Eastern European roots can help me. Alendzki. He was a director of Forest Refuge for a long time. I think he isn't now. But he talks about this and these factors, and he says, this is important because, as the very first verse of the Dhammapada says, we become what we think. Every thought, emotion, intention, attitude, and aspiration shapes how ensuing experience will unfold. So this is one of these areas, you know, to really cultivate, and it just, as kind of like Stacy was saying, it kind of sets the day going, you know, moment by moment. We keep resetting in terms of wholesome and unwholesome and how we cultivate those. And it's really kind of tactile and available. That's why it's really worth looking at. And an important aspect of this is that, and we'll talk about this later, but the kind of not personal, not self core of these qualities of mind. You know, there are these qualities of mind, but it's not like me doing this. We don't have to grasp onto it and consider it me, but just they are qualities of mind. and we can work with them without identifying with them. And it's really helpful. And we'll talk about that. But you know, it's in the West especially, we tend to identify with qualities of mind. So if we're feeling happy, if there's a, or if we feel that we think well about ourselves, and if we're feeling in a difficult place, or even if there's some unwholesome quality, we tend to be down on ourselves. But the more we can understand they're just qualities of mind and work with them and not identify with them, then that's a way to not be stuck. Because we got a lot of self-recrimination, you know, pain, when people latch on to mental factors they see in themselves and create this whole idea of themselves that that's who I am, that I am this person that is that way, and kind of get stuck there. And then we end up replicating it. So it's not necessary. It's just not really even true. That's just something happening right now. And then other people also, you know, because this is like, what's going on with us, and then what's going on with others that were around? Because sometimes when people have mental factors that are strong, they don't even see them. They're oblivious about them. We see that happening with people around us, where they'll have some strong mental factor dominating how they're approaching us, and we see it, but they don't, because they're in the middle of it. But we do the same thing. You know, we don't see what's going on. What's our tone, our mental tone, our... And so if you don't see it, we can't do much with it. And sometimes we're covering things up, or sometimes things are buried by conditioning and we just can't see it yet. Sometimes the conditioning is so dense that this person hasn't gotten there yet. So it's a key sort of awareness of wholesome and unwholesome and these mental factors. It's a point of contact with our mindfulness practice, and in particular the third foundation of mindfulness. Because, you know, we sit in meditation, we see arisings and passings of the body and emotions and thinking, and these are all kind of tangible things in various ways that we can identify, we can note them, we're aware when they're happening, even if we're just totally lost in them, we still can see them flying by. But the third foundation is a little harder to see. I mean, it's sort of like the color of our glasses. It's elusive. And it's right in the same arena as wholesome and unwholesome, these qualities of mind. And so to be able to be aware of those is really cool, because we just walk around, you know, we sort of swim through life like a fish in water. Fish in water doesn't know it's in water. We're in our mental states and don't know we're in our mental states. But the more we can become aware of them, uncomfortable though that can be, it's huge. And it can be kind of a jolt, you know, when we kind of realize, oh, my goodness, this is how I navigate the world. This is what I carry around a lot. It's kind of a little spooky. This is what I've been doing for years. I remember when I was in, God, somehow junior high school keeps jumping out at me. But there was, you know, I kind of suddenly started realizing I was walking around with a certain kind of attitude, which was mostly like feeling crappy about myself, I guess. But I kind of got it that it wasn't inherent. It just was an attitude. It was like a thought form I was in. And that was like one of the ways that I think my practice started, was just realizing, wait a minute, I don't have to live in this. I don't have to think this is me. And then as we bring this into mindfulness, in the third foundation in particular, you know, we start to realize they're not inherently us. They're not inherently anything. They're just factors flying by. They're just phenomena arising and passing. And they're powered by causes and conditions. They come from somewhere. It's incredibly freeing. Because most humans walk around thinking that these mental factors are them. And so in terms of wholesome and unwholesome, you know, they kind of if people think they have an unwholesome quality of mind, they'll brood about that because that's where they're wrong or damaged, or, you know, people feel like they're irreparably damaged sometimes. And there's wounds, yeah, but not irreparably damaged. There's no such thing. These are just qualities right now, this lifetime maybe, who knows. But they can be changed. Ajahn Pasano, wonderful, wonderful, he's the abbot. Well, he's not the abbot, he used to be the abbot, but he's kind of quasi-retired abbot at Abayagiri. But one of the most senior Western monks in Ajahn Chah lineage. He says, the Buddha often described wise attention as knowing when there are wholesome states present in the mind and knowing when there are unwholesome states present. It's also a quality that supports right effort, generating the wholesome and discouraging the unwholesome. That's pretty simple, huh? Wise attention, just knowing when there are wholesome and unwholesome states, just recognizing it without personalizing it. Just like, I got a pain in my knee. Just like that. No more laden or not. Just that. So that's kind of a secret. That's kind of like, it's one way of looking at the secret of practice, is that it's all changeable. We're not stuck. And we can choose and create our futures through our practice and through our cultivation. And it's sort of, you know, with mindfulness practice, we're being aware, we're not actually sort of, we're just being aware moment by moment and watching what's happening. And this has a quality of choosing a little bit, you know, working with wholesome and unwholesome, which is good. And they work with each other. They're not in opposition. So a little bit of discomfort sometimes as we, you know, have to, especially in terms of unwholesome mental factors, because that's what we're touching on a little more tonight, is we have to see them in order to realize they're there. And in a sense, before we can free ourselves from them, we kind of need to recognize them. And that's not somewhat so fun sometimes, but, you know, it's okay. but it's not fun. But that's sort of the honesty of this practice, is we bump up against everything. We bump up against every wound, every scar, every fear. And then we breathe with it. And then we can be free. And if some of those things are unwholesome mental factors or qualities, there's an opportunity there to start changing them. But we got to see them if we have a repeating pattern. And it's sort of like, you know, the carrot and the stick thing. There's sort of a carrot here because these unwholesome mental factors are aspects that bring suffering to us often. You know what they say? Pain happens, suffering is optional. That's sort of what the Buddha taught. I teach suffering and the end of suffering. Dukkha, that word dukkha. So, in a sense, we suffer because of mental factors that we identify with, that we're stuck in. And so there's an opportunity to be free. In Pali, that's the language of early Buddhism, the relevant words here are kusala and akusala, so wholesome and unwholesome. Kusala means wholesome, akusala is the opposite. So that's as bad as it gets. It's not good and evil, just wholesome and unwholesome. And we can work with that, right? It's not so loaded, not so loaded. And these unwholesome mental factors, their problems or their issues, just because they compromise our ability to awaken. They get in the way, you know? They obscure our ability to see. So in a way, moving toward the wholesome is just like cleaning our glasses, you know, so we can see. It's just cleaning away the grime of unwholesomeness so we can see more clearly. Like seeing yourself in the mirror. To see yourself clearly, got to clean the glass. And if there's unwholesome states of mind that are occupying a certain part of our attention, then we're not going to be able to see ourselves. So, yeah, there's work to be done, but there's a carrot there. It's doable. And it's all changeable. So in the classic Theravada texts, especially in the Abhidhamma, so there's a tiny primer. There's what's called in, And Theravada, the world of Theravada texts is what's called the Three Baskets, or the Tripitaka. And the biggest one, I think, is the suttas, this whole vast bunch of the teachings, and they're kind of little stories, and there's about this much. And then is the Vinaya, which is the rule of monastics. And then the Abhidhamma, which was arguably created after the time of the Buddha, maybe, but it's sort of a systematized version of what is in the suttas. It's kind of all pulled out and made into systems, and listen, and it's dry. I mean, it's not fun to read, but it's pretty powerful. And I don't pretend to understand be very down in those weeds. But nonetheless, that's what the Abhidhamma is. So in the Abhidhamma, there's 14 unwholesome mental factors. And that's a lot, and I'm not going to drag it through 14 unwholesome mental factors. But if we take a step deeper to the root of those 14, then we see our old friends, the three poisons. And as some of you have seen, we talked one time about the big wheel of samsara that they have in Tibetan stuff, which down in the center of it, there's the three poisons, and that drives why we're not awakened, basically. And just for those of you who aren't familiar, they're greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed, hatred, and delusion, those are the three poisons. And they're at the center of the wheel of samsara. They're embodied, and I apologize to farmyard animals everywhere, but greed is a rooster or a bird, and aversion's a snake, and ignorance is a pig, is how it's, represented. But in any case, that's down in the core of what makes unwholesome factors happen, is greed, aversion, and delusion. Bhikkhu Bodhi, great translator of the suttas, says, unwholesome consciousness, akusala citta. So, akusala. Back up for a second. Let's see, I'm learning my Pali here. Yeah, akusala, there you go. Akusala, so that's unwholesome, and citta is mind or heart mind, so that's unwholesome consciousness, he just said it. Is consciousness accompanied by one or another of the three unwholesome roots, greed, hatred, and delusion, as Bhikkhu Bodhi. Such consciousness is called unwholesome because it is mentally unhealthy, morally blameworthy, and productive of painful results. Productive of painful results. We don't want those. And some of the specifics of the 14, they include greed, conceit, envy, miserliness, kind of real specific kinds of unwholesome states of mind that we might live in. You can look them up on the web. But we see them arise. I mean, that's what's interesting about this. We can see them arise, whatever is your particular, inclination. Let's say it's envy. You see envy arise. It's like, oh, you again. We're aware of it. Oh, you again. And then it changes everything when we're aware of it. And then we can decide whether we're going to act or not, for one thing, on envy. But we can also hold it differently once we see it. And that's what these arisings are. It's just like a dog barking outside, or an embarrassing thought arising in our minds. You ever have an embarrassing thought arise when you're sitting? Right? It's like that, Envy is an embarrassing thought or an embarrassing quality arising in us. But okay, fine. See that. So, explore a little bit about letting go of unwholesome states of mind, because that's kind of what we talk about tonight, is letting go of them or working with them. And next time we'll talk about cultivating wholesome. But letting go of them is really, in one way of looking at it, is three steps. One is just recognizing, being aware of them. Gotta see them first. The second is realizing they're not us. There's something happening, but it's not me or you. And then to attenuate them or work with them or let go of them. That's the third step. Once we see them, realize they're not us, then we can work with them. So there's sort of a training in each three of these. So first, just recognizing it. That's the big part. Just yesterday, or maybe 2 days ago, Dharma friend, very practiced person, I won't say her name, but she said, She was talking about, she said she was really aware of how often critical or judgmental she is about other people. And it was kind of this confession, and she felt kind of bad about it. But I was kind of celebrating how amazing she is, because she was so aware of that. Most people are critical and judgmental, and they just do that. Oh, yeah, that's what I did. You know, this person really sucks. God, look at the way he's driving. Oh, all that stuff. She saw it. She just saw it, and I don't want to do that. So I was just, I could just feel how her sense of things was so subtle that she was seeing things that most people absolutely just do and are in. So it was wonderful. It was fruit of her practice. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I can see a nodding out there. And so that is the most critical step in letting go of unwholesome states of mind, is just to see it. There's Pogo. I didn't show your age, or I'll show my age. Pogo is this great comic strip from, God, the 50s and the 60s. And his most famous, he's famous for this. And actually, it turns out it's a quote from Commander Perry, who was a British admiral. And then Walt Kelly morphed it into what Pogo said, which is, we have met the enemy and he is us. But nonetheless, that is kind of what we run into when we stumble upon unwholesome states of mind in ourselves. We've met the enemy and he is us. But then once we see the enemy, he's not an enemy anymore, because we see him. So that's sort of a tricky thing about the wholesome mind states, and maybe perhaps, you know, dangerous in the world, because most people don't realize they're having them. And sometimes these are people in positions of power. And they're having unwholesome mind states with, you know, with weapons at their command, et cetera. So, and people often, and this is sort of where compassion arises, because there may be people with whom we violently or intensely disagree, but they're lost in their unwholesome mind states. And that's also true, you know? So, yeah, they could be making different choices, maybe, but there's a place for compassion there, because you can see they're lost. They don't see what they're doing, you know? Just like we sometimes are lost. So with the compassion goes both ways. We can have compassion for ourselves. And people acting out unwholesome mind states are oblivious. They often can't see what's obvious to us, or even people we encounter in lives, our friends, our relatives, the clerk in the store, or whatever. You know, we see people do unwholesome mind states all the time, and often they just don't know they're doing it, right? I mean, we probably do the same thing. I'm sure I do, as my wife will point out. But, and thank you. But yeah, we do oblivious stuff, and we do unwholesome mind states, and then we act on them. And that's sort of, like, it's one thing to have the state of mind, and the next thing is to act on it or not act on it. Two different things there. So the first step is to become aware, you know? Back to mindfulness, and you could think of it in terms of the third foundation, but just to become aware of when unwholesome mind states are arising. Just be aware of them. It doesn't have to be heavy. It's just, oh yeah, oh you again. It's that whole thing with Mara. You know, very useful metaphor. And some of you may know Mara is a sort of semi-mythic figure who, at the time of the Buddha, was becoming enlightened, just did everything he could to stop the Buddha from being enlightened. And over the course of the night when he became enlightened, Mara had vast armies attacking the Buddha. Then he had all of his beautiful undulating daughters trying to entice the Buddha, one thing after another. And the Buddha just kept saying, I see you, Mara, I see you, Mara, because it was stuff. So it's a great tool. And Mara keeps, Mara never gives up for Buddha's entire life. He keeps trying. And the Buddha will say, I see you, Mara. And then Mara's, his shoulders slump and he slinks away. Damn, saw me again. So we can do that when our unwholesome mind states come up, whatever one you're prone to. It's like, oh yeah, you. I see you, Mara. And it's really, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's kind of helpful that it's kind of funny. So the first step is to become aware. And in that process, well, you know, we'll learn where they grab us. And why their power, you know, each one of us has our characteristics in this arena, what ones we're prone to. And we can sort of understand when we look at our own patterns why some other person, some unwholesome mind state is like an obsession. for them. It's hard for them to resist, all that kind of stuff. We have our own inclinations, so we can see them. But if we're aware, that's half the battle. Because we're not just going to blindly do it. I just don't have any. You know, it's funny. It's like a lot of movies are all about unwholesome mind states and people yielding to them and getting into trouble. I don't need patience. I just don't even watch that kind of stuff anymore. It's like, why? I don't want to, you know? And it's amazing when you start to look at it. It's just everyone's careening around, yielding to their unwholesome mind states, and then it gets really bleak. So we can just, and this is where noting is really handy, you know? If it's a powerful thing, a fire in your heart, you could note burning, burning, burning when that unwholesome mind state is there, and just like, you see it happening. Just seeing it happening, that's the first step. And this isn't this awareness. It's not self-analysis, you know, it's not psychology. I mean, we'll see patterns and roots of origin, but we're not trying to go back in there and solve it or figure out who to blame or all that kind of stuff. I mean, it may happen, but we don't have to blame anybody. But it may happen, we'll understand things, but mostly we're just trying to really see it to not be stuck. We're trying to be mindful of it to not be stuck. That's really what's happening, and to be able to see, you know, the three characteristics, but we're not going there right now, but the emptiness of it, all that. So it doesn't matter really where it came from or what lifetime it came from. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing, right? Just hypothetically, if we had a bunch of lifetimes and maybe a lot of our weirdness in our hearts and with each other comes from other lifetimes and, you know, hypothetically, and we don't know. But that doesn't mean we can't work with it. So in the same way, we don't have to figure this stuff out necessarily. We just need to work with it. We don't even need to, like, you know, talk it out with the rude relative. I mean, maybe we can sometime, but we don't have to. We can find the freedom in ourselves. So the second step is just seeing through the illusion that this unwholesome state is us, because we tend to identify with them. And once we've gotten aware of it, then it starts to get easier to see that this unwholesome state we're stuck in is made of compounded phenomena. You know, it's different parts of ourselves, different parts of our psyche. We add up to this thing we're prone to, this quality that we're prone to. And once we can see that, then when we see the compounded nature of it right there, that unpacks the idea that it's ourself, that it's inherently us. Because where is the inherent us in something that's made up of parts? It's just not there. And you know, a lot of times people kind of, you know, we're paradoxical, and we often try to own the things that are the most painful to us. So if something's really hurting us, we kind of like lock down and that's who I am. I am the suffering person. And we tell ourselves that over and over, and we tell other people that, and we'll really identify with it. And so it sticks us there. But the more we realize that there is no us to be weighty about, then it's like, okay, then we got to let go. You know, we just can't stay stuck. So it's really this seeing this not self is a place where it's really useful. It's not just hypothetical. And you look what people do, you know, people just really get lodged in their idea of themselves. And often these are unwholesome qualities that they'll keep replicating and replicating and replicating because they think that's who they are. So they just kind of gave up. And you think of this partial list of the 14 unwholesome factors: greed, conceit, envy, miserliness. Someone who's embodying those are powerful energies. I mean, you think about, you know, like villains in movies and stuff, but those are powerful things that when someone's really, that's sort of who they think they are, there's a lot of energy there. And people do powerful things with them. It's kind of ferocious, actually. So it's not nothing. And that's sort of what's, you know, hard to be around people like that, because you can't approach them, you can't talk about it, you can't challenge them, they'll blow up. It's just a ton of fire in there. But the more we can see that, you know, just see that these unwholesome things have this predilection to be fiery like that. And if we can see that, then we can not be stuck there and maybe not judge others too. So see, the first step, you know, seeing it, the second step kind of unbinding, And then it becomes unbinding our sense of self, and then it becomes clearer that these states aren't really a huge, irresolvable, life-defining problem, but kind of a factor of practice, a milestone on the path, a doorway even. You know, the very things that we're the harshest about, that we're the heaviest about, those are the things where our growth often lies. And we'll be exploring cultivating wholesome mind states next section, but this time is more about freeing ourselves from the unwholesome. And you know, once we are aware that they're there, that it's not us, then we can start to let go. And one thing that's helpful is a lot of these things, and this is where it gets into ethics or sila, because a lot of these things, greed, conceit, envy, miserliness, hatred, they have to do with getting something we think will gratify us. That's kind of at the core of it. You've got an individual, they do these things, and they think somewhere in their, somewhere, that if they follow out, act on greed or miserliness, they'll be better off than if they didn't. And they'll get something usually from somebody else because we're all in this social context. So, you know, for miserly, that means we have something to keep and we hold on to it and don't share it. So in a way, we're thinking we're benefiting by not giving to others. It's always in the context of other people that these things happen. And as this becomes clearer, as we look at it in our practice, we start to see that the other person is as deserving as happiness as ourselves. And this starts to right there put the brakes on acting out these unwholesome qualities. And this is really where, you know, sila, Buddhist ethics, come from. You know, the five precepts is not acting on, not doing things that will harm others so that we can get the goods. All the five precepts really come down to that. There's a great phrase in Tibetan Buddhism I really like, exchanging self for other. It has to do with cultivating bodhicitta, but exchanging self for other. It's just a simple little phrase, but it means we flip it. You know, the very part of us that wants to have us get it first, we just flip it and want them to get it first. And it's really powerful, and it kind of cuts away at this or undermines the way that so many of these unwholesome qualities are self-oriented. And we start to realize that, you know, any act that causes pain to another is as inconceivable as an act that causes pain to ourselves. And it just blows away that distinction. If you ever read Shantideva, he's incredible, an 8th century pundit from India, revered in Tibetan worlds, guided a bodhisattva's way of life. And he's amazing about this kind of stuff. It's so beautiful. So, we free ourselves by realizing how painful is the alternative, that these unwholesome states and our separating from others and putting ourselves first, it's painful for us. And we can just start to choose, you know? That's where ethics come. We just choose what we act on, and that helps us change how we think. And there's a lot of cultivating and choosing going on in this arena. But it's pretty magical. And I'm going to close here by reading, and I'm trying to do better at giving you citations. So this is Numerical Discourses 369. And as some of you know, the Numerical Discourses is really bizarre and it's huge set of suttas, but they're based on numbers. So this is in the threes. Like every one of the suttas in some way has a theme of three in it. And the sevens, they all have a list of seven. So this is three, this is in the threes, and there's the 69th one called Roots. And the Buddha's talking about this very question of unwholesome and letting it go or freeing ourselves from it. So he says, suppose a tree was choked and enveloped by three maluva creepers, which I think are like vines. Then a man would come along bringing a shovel and a basket. He would cut down the creepers at their roots, dig them up, and pull out the roots, even the fine rootlets and root fiber. He would cut the creepers into pieces, split the pieces, and reduce them to slivers. In this way, those maluva creepers would be cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated, so they are no more subject to future arising. So too, bhikkhus, such a person has abandoned the bad, unwholesome qualities, born of greed, born of hatred, born of delusion, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, obliterated them, so they are no more subject to future arising. He dwells happily in this very life without distress, anguish, or fever, and in this very life he attains nibbana. Let's sit for a moment.